Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're continuing today with the rest of chapter 3 of part 2, in which the inhabitants of Vaikuntha preach to Gopikumar. And up on your left-hand side of the board, a couple of the headings actually from yesterday. Those are the two parts we didn't go through of chapter 3, that the inhabitants of Vrindavan instruct Gopikumar to perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, consisting of the 9 different devotional processes. So they establish the practice of devotional service as such, as being the best thing to do. And then the second part, they say that of the 9 processes, process of chanting is most important, and particularly the process of chanting the names. There are names, pastimes, qualities, philosophy, but the chanting of the names is the best. And as part and parcel of that, they say that it is better than meditation, or better than just remembering the Lord. Meditation means the highest stage of remembrance. So chanting is better than remembering, and better even than meditating. And if you chant, then you will come to see the Lord directly, even with these eyes, by His mercy. And when you see the Lord, that is better than seeing Him, so to speak, in meditation within the heart. To see Him externally, so to speak, in front of you, is better than perceiving Him or seeing Him in meditation. That, of course, Pipalayana had said that meditation is the best process, or remembering specifically, culminating in meditating on the Lord. That's the best process. And to see the Lord in meditation is the best experience, the best way to see Him, better than seeing Him with one's eyes or seeing Him externally. But the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they are going to endeavor to defeat that philosophy today. So, we were there in Mahakalapur, and we had met Lord Shiva. In fact, you know, I came across a reference yesterday that Shiva Loka, in fact, is on the other side of Mahakalapur. So, it's not exactly according to that Mahakalapur, or the Brahmajyoti, is synonymous with Shiva Loka. At least this is what it says. It's all a little esoteric, of course, but this is what it said. So they were passing through Mahakalapur. Lord Shiva and his associates were passing through, and Gopikumar met them and then went on with them. They were on their way to Kailash. He went on with them, and after a little while, they met some inhabitants of Vaikuntha. That was very amazing. Lord Shiva became completely beside himself in ecstasy. And Gopikumar, of course, he didn't know who these people were, but it was explained to him. And now, basically, Lord Shiva has handed Gopikumar over to the Vaikuntha Vasis. So now they're going to instruct Gopakumar. First of all, that he should render devotional service even with the current body, even though devotional service is spiritual and this body is material, but still, if you engage this body in those activities of devotional service, spiritual activities, then even though the body is material, but still the activity is spiritual, therefore it's spiritually beneficial. So, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha then, after some exchanges with Lord Shiva, they approached Gopakumar and said that we count you as one of the devotees, one of us. Not one of us, exactly, but one of the devotees, because if you recall, they had said that they descend from Vaikuntha, they enter the different universes of the different Brahmas in order to help the devotees and protect the devotees. So they told Gopakumar that you're one of the devotees. They told him that your guru is named Jayanta. That we hadn't heard until this point. He's from Mathura. And he is a type of incarnation of Krishna. He's some sort of empowered form of the Lord. That's a little mysterious, actually. But he's very special in that regard. And they have come for him. They are on a special mission to get him. So they understand. Well, they say, if you want to come to this Vaikuntha realm, then you should perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and act in terms of the nine processes. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishno, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. These are the nine processes of devotional service. And in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we perform these different activities in regulated ways, under rules and regulations, under the direction of authority, particularly the spiritual master and the scriptures and the senior devotees, like this. And they said, you should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Particularly two things you should hear from Srimad Bhagavatam or focus on. You should hear about the descriptions of the practical execution of the process. That's one thing. And you should hear about the pastimes. And they say that actually any one of the nine processes can be sufficient. Anything other than the nine processes, anything outside those nine processes is useless. But generally the devotees, the advanced devotees, the great devotees, even though they may focus on one of the processes, but generally they like to do all of them. In Nectar of Devotion, it explains which great devotees have focused on which processes. Who focused on Shravanam? Maharaj Parikshit. And Kirtanam? Remembrance? Yes. And like this, there are nine great devotees who have particularly focused on different of those nine processes. So the inhabitants of Vaikuntha say that often it happens that great devotees will focus in on one of them, but on the whole, they like to perform all of them. And anyway, they're making some good points, but if we listen carefully, we'll see that there are also, just like the discussion about meditation, you know, there are some very good points there, but, you know, there's some things which we might not entirely agree with absolutely. And this is why, of course, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha are going to defeat some of those points. But now they're going to make some points about devotional service, which, you know, some are very good and some, there's good in them, but they may not be absolutely on the topmost level of understanding of the process. So they say that wherever devotional service is performed is as good as Vaikuntha, but still the great devotees prefer to be in Vaikuntha because the Lord is there. So that's nice, that's okay. But what does it indicate? What does it indicate to you? Mother Rati Manjari. That's it, exactly. They are attached to Salokya Mukti. And they all are, including these ones here, who are instructing Gopakumā. They're recognizing that all devotional service is absolute. So, therefore, it doesn't really matter whether you're in Vaikuntha, in heaven, in hell, or on this planet, or wherever you are. But still, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha prefer to be in Vaikuntha because the Lord is there. And, yeah, like that. So then they emphasize how, even though these activities of devotional service are performed with the material body, at least when you're doing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and you're just practicing these nine processes. So even though this devotional service is performed with the material body, still it is completely spiritual. And then they give a few reasons. Note these down. Because they have themselves seen liberated souls engage in those activities and advance. They're already liberated. They're already beyond anything to do with material activity, anything material. They're liberated souls, but they're engaged in those practices of devotional service and they advanced further. They saw that. So of course there are examples. Shukadev Goswami is a classic example. The four Kumars can be considered examples. And there is, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the famous Atmarama verse, Atmaramas Chamunayo, Nir Granta Apyarukrame, Kuravantya Haitakim Bhaktim, Itam Bhuta Gunahari. That even all kinds of Atmaramas, self-realized or people who are satisfied in the self, even all types of them engage in devotional service, even though they're self-satisfied, or in other words, liberated. But they become inspired to render devotional service to the Lord because the Lord has transcendental qualities and their experience while rendering devotional service is transcendental and they advance further. And that verse is particularly referring to Shukadev, in fact. Okay, so then a second reason. They say that these activities, these nine processes, the activities of devotional service, manifest spontaneously in the Satchit Ananda bodies of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. They just feel impelled to render devotional service automatically. Of course, that's not Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but it is Bhakti. It's the same nine activities, hearing, chanting, and remembering, but on the perfect level. So if they were material activities, then how could they manifest spontaneously in these residents of Vaikuntha? And then they say, we are evidence of this ourselves. A third point. That they of course are on their ways to the material world, different parts of the material world, to help the devotees in different ways. But they say that we travel everywhere. They're regularly doing like this. And they always remain completely untouched by the modes. In other words, they've done this before. This is not the first time that they are going into the material world to help the devotees. They've done it many times, but whenever they've done it, they've always remained independent of the modes. But then their final point before they get into the subject or start focusing on the one main process which they're going to emphasize, the last point they make is that still, even though devotional service is completely transcendental, completely spiritual, and has nothing to do with the material body really, but in order to encourage the new devotees, that's us, Bhakti Devi sometimes makes it appear that devotional service is something which arises from our sensory functions. Like we might think, my tongue is chanting Hare Krishna, my eyes are seeing the deity. So in this way, we might think that the activities of devotional service are activities which arise from these material sensory functions, but they make the point that this is just the mercy of Bhakti Devi. In fact, these devotional activities and even the neophyte, the new devotees' engagement in these devotional activities, it simply arises by the mercy of the Lord. That's all. But it would be a bit too much for the new devotees to digest this immediately. Therefore, Bhakti Devi makes it appear like we are responsible. This appears to be related to the point, important point, at the beginning of Madhurya Kadambani, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses where does bhakti come from. So it doesn't come from our karma. In other words, it doesn't just come from our material beings, our material bodies, minds, and the, you know, different conditions that our material bodies and minds are in. It's coming from Krishna, it's coming from Bhakti Devi via the devotees. So it's an expression of mercy, in fact. But for the new devotees, the Vaikunthavasis say, it's a little difficult to grasp this point initially. So therefore, Bhakti Devi makes it appear like we are more responsible for our engagement in devotional service than we really are. But the advanced devotees, they know that it's all just going on the basis of mercy, that's all. And they relish that. So, then the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they tell Gopakumar that you have to do this. You want to come to Vaikuntha, that place which is even beyond liberation. So you have to perform these nine processes. You have to perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But, you know, you're not going to just do it here. You've got to go back to Vrindavan. That is the best place for it. If you simply practice pure devotional service, and particularly Nam Sankirtan in Vrindavan, with the aspiration to attain the Lord's lotus feet, then you'll gradually come to the level of prema and be able to enter Vaikuntha and see the Lord there, that Lord you are so hankering to see. So then they begin this discussion or little debate establishing how chanting is better than remembering. Now, there's remembering and meditating. They make a distinction between the two, or at least in the sense that meditating is the highest level of remembering. To just simply remember, recall into one's brain, is not meditation. Meditation means to be totally absorbed to the exclusion of everything else in remembrance. So, note down a few of these points. The process of chanting acts on the sense of speech, the sense of hearing, and the mind. Remembering only involves the mind. Then chanting benefits the chanter and anyone else who happens to hear it. And the tongue is so powerful. Oh, the tongue is so powerful, it's amazing. Incredible. That if you can control the tongue, you can control your mind, and then you can remember nicely. So therefore, remembrance is a fruit of chanting. And therefore chanting is better. So those are three points about why chanting is better than remembering. Chanting engages speech, hearing, and the mind. Chanting engages three faculties: the tongue, the ear, and the mind. Remembering only involves the mind. So then they make a kind of esoteric point. It's an interesting point, that it is possible that meditation could be considered equal to chanting when the person is perfect. Because whatever process a perfect person performs is the best for him. Yeah. Then it doesn't really matter. And then they're all equal. Then the chanting is synonymous with remembering. And the remembering is synonymous with chanting. And for such a devotee, chanting will increase the bliss of meditation. Meditation will increase the bliss of chanting. So it doesn't really matter. On the perfect level, whatever the devotee does is best. It's all best. But still, on a more sort of down-to-earth level, or a level more like our level, Sankirtan is better on a broader level. Meditation and chanting could only be considered equal or something like that when the, or like remembering and chanting, when the remembering is on that very elevated level of meditation. But otherwise, Sankirtan gives bliss to everyone. It arouses prema very quickly. Others who hear become happy. And so on and so forth like this. Yes, okay. Then, final point they make to do with chanting. Chanting the Lord's names is the best and most powerful way to come to prema. And when you have come to prema through chanting, then your prema will inspire you to chant more, and your chanting will inspire more prema, and then you'll feel separation from the Lord and call out for the Lord like the chatak bird calling out for rain clouds. Anyway, then he makes an interesting point that when you chant, your reactions are reduced to nil. If non-devotees chant, their karma is reduced to nil except for what they are currently experiencing. And if great devotees appear to be receiving karma, it is either because they want to cover their advanced position or they want to teach people a lesson. Then he gives three examples. Bharat Maharaj wanted to teach the fault of bad association. Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to teach the fault of gambling. King Nrig wanted to show the danger of taking the property of Brahmins. Well, that's a very interesting analysis, particularly Bharat Maharaj. But anyway, that is what they say. So they tell Gopakumar that they will help him, and that as far as they can see, he is qualified to receive the Lord's full mercy. And the way they figured that out is because he refused to become a meditator on Tapaloka. Since that time, they have had this idea that he is qualified. So there they have addressed the point, or the idea, that the process of meditation, or remembering actually, the process of remembering is the best process. Now they're going to address the point of how do you see the Lord? What is the best way to see the Lord? Within the mind, or actually with your eyes? So they say that the Lord's body is spiritual and can only be seen with spiritual senses. But still, despite that, if you please the Lord through devotional service, then by his mercy, you can see him. And If that is not possible, they say, then it would be impossible to see him through meditation also, because that's also dependent on his mercy. Then they give the example of Kardama Muni. In the 21st chapter of the third canto, it is described how Kardama Muni meditated on the Lord for 10,000 years. And it was a wonderful experience. It must have been to have continued on for 10,000 years. But then he saw the Lord, and that was better. They also give the example of Prahlad. That's how he was remembering the Lord, but it was better when he saw the Lord. That's there also. Kardama, it seems to be clearer, at least from the description in Srimad Bhagavatam, how his experience when he saw the Lord, that was a higher experience for him than the experience he had when he was meditating on the Lord. So they say, well, Kardama in fact said, when he saw the Lord, he said that many yogis meditate on you for hundreds of lifetimes, many births, in order to see your form. So this is all stressing how seeing directly is better than seeing through meditation. Then the Vaikuntavasis say that meditation is good when you cannot see the Lord directly. But Sankirtan is good always. So Gopakumar should go to Vrindavan and chant. And suddenly, Gopakumar was there. This brings us to chapter 4. We've written a few headings on the board there. Well, first of all, he has some experiences in Vrindavan. He meets his guru again. Then he goes to Vaikuntha. Let us just briefly describe what happens when he's in Vrindavan. So he went back to Vrindavan, and what did he see? He saw it was more beautiful than any place he had seen so far. Now, if you recall, yesterday, as he was going through the coverings, he was seeing the coverings as being better and better and better. So much better than Brahmaloka. But now he's seeing Vrindavan better than that. So what does that mean? It means he's beginning to develop some transcendental eyes. Although he hasn't come absolutely to that point. But he's beginning to develop transcendental eyes. Well, he was already beginning yesterday, because he saw it as the same. But now he's seeing it even better than the same. You remember that? He saw yesterday, when he came back to Vrindavan from Brahmaloka, he saw the whole world had changed except Vrindavan was like how it had been before. It hadn't changed. So in other words, he was seeing through the whatever material superficial covering there was of Vrindavan like what we see. No, he probably didn't see the tempos or, you know, the rickshaws and so on. But now he sees it better. So that means spiritual advancement is there. It's coming more and more on the basis of his chanting. So he became so absorbed. This is not included here. This is just a little introduction before he goes to Vaikuntha. He became so absorbed, he forgot about going to Vaikuntha. He was wandering around, he went to Mathura, he met some Brahmins, and started hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from them, which just, incidentally, was what the Vaikuntha-vasis told him to do. And then, he actually sat there for some time, and he finally became educated. Up until this point, he just hasn't known anything, except, you know, when he meets someone and they explain it, and then it's all news to him. But now he's become educated as a devotee. Yes. And then he saw his guru again. And this time, his guru gave him complete instruction. He covered everything. The whole science of devotional service, even confidential aspects up to the level of love of God, and how to achieve love of God, even up to the level of entering one's eternal relationship with the Lord. So Gopakumar, naturally, as a result of that, became more advanced. And now, when Gopakumar was doing his chanting, now he would regularly see Madan Gopal and his pastimes and his associates. He would regularly see. And he would regularly just become totally overwhelmed and just all ecstatic symptoms would be there. He'd lose control of himself, become incapacitated, faint, unconscious, all these very, very high manifestations of advanced Krishna consciousness. So he was carrying on like this. One day, he thought he saw the Lord. He didn't actually see the Lord. He thought he saw the Lord. And he went running to the Lord to embrace him, but then fainted. The next thing he knew, he was waking up on a Vaikuntha airplane. He didn't see it, but it came in when he fainted. And the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, same inhabitants who he met in Mahakalapur, they picked him up, put him on the plane while he was unconscious. He came back to consciousness and saw, oh, where am I? This most incredible craft. And then he saw those same inhabitants of Vaikuntha. So they immediately tried to preach to him, accept Sarupya Mukti. We'll give you a four-armed form like ours. He said, no thanks. And he remained as a cowherd boy. Although he saw his cowherd boy body become Satchit Ananda in front of his eyes. It appears this is the second time it's happening. Anyway, I'm not exactly sure how all this is going on, because it very clearly said yesterday in chapter 3 that he acquired a transcendental body before he went through the coverings. But here he sees in front of his eyes on the airship that even though he doesn't get a four-armed Vaikuntha body, he remains same cowherd boy looking body, but it becomes Satchit Ananda. So they travel through the universe, past all the planets where he's been, All the people on the planets offer him respect. Particularly the rulers, they offer him respect because they know he's going to Vaikuntha. He goes through the coverings. He goes through Mahakalapur. He goes past Shiva Loka. Lord Shiva and Uma come out and offer him respect. And he humbly responds, but carries on. So then they arrive in Vaikuntha. They arrive in the suburbs. That's how it's described. At the gates to the main palace area of the Lord. But on the edge of the suburbs. The devotees, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, tell Gopakumar, just wait here. We'll go and get permission from the Lord. We'll go and get permission from the Lord, and as soon as he gives permission, then we'll bring you in. So they can see, believe it or not, Gopakumar is already feeling some anxiety. This is not what I saw in my meditation. And you know, it's pretty impressive, but it's not that. The sweetness is not there so much. So they told him, in order to forget, about his anxiety about whether he's in the right place or not, they tell him, just have a look around for the time being and have a look at Vaikuntha and see what you think. So, he is there then. Suddenly, someone comes flying in on an incredible flying vehicle. Even beyond the vehicle that he came on. And he thought, aha, they must have made a mistake. The Lord is not in his palace. He had gone out. He's coming back now. And I'm just fortunate to bump into him here. Because he saw that person. The person on that flying vehicle was the most unbelievable person. The vehicle had the opulences of hundreds of universes. And the devotee was just unbelievable. He threw himself at that four-armed person's feet, calling out, "Oh Lord, save me!" But the devotee covered his ears and made gestures to stop Gopakumar and said, "I'm just a servant. I'm just a servant of the servants," and then went in. So Gopakumar felt a little embarrassed. He looked around. In came an even more fantastic flying vehicle and an even more fantastic looking person. And he thought, surely this is him. So he did the same thing. He threw himself at the lotus feet of the devotee, begging for mercy, but the devotee told him the same thing. No, I'm just a servant here. I'm just the servant of the servants, and went in. So then more and more of these people started coming with more and more fantastic forms. Some alone, some in pairs, some in larger groups. And every time Gopakumar threw himself at their feet, begging for mercy, telling them that, "Oh my Lord, finally I've met you." But they all told him, "No, we're just servants." So this happened on numerous occasions. So some of these people were carrying various things that were their implements for their services. Some of them were coming just in states of madness in love, as if being mad in love was their service. Some of them were offering obeisances. Well, they were all offering obeisances, reciting prayers, reciting glorious pastimes of the exploits of the Lord and his conquests and so on. Some of them came with their families and paraphernalia. Some of them had their families and paraphernalia within themselves. Hare Krishna. If that sounds transcendental and beyond comprehension, I think that's because it is. Some of them were transforming from one type of form to another, and then another, and then another. Like an animal form, then a bird form, then a tree form, then a human form. Some of them looked like humans, some like monkeys, some like sages, some like demons. Hare Krishna. Some looked like demigods, some looked like Indra, they had thousands of eyes on their bodies. Some looked like Chandra, Surya. Some looked like Brahmins. Some had three eyes. Some had four heads. Some had four arms. Some had thousands of heads. Some had eight arms. Ah, it must have been very amazing for Gopakumar. And even though they all had the facility of Sarupya Mukti, but they were not all in the same forms as the Lord. And why that is, we'll explain, well, Narada Muni will explain tomorrow why they are not all in that manifest state of Sarupya Mukti, of having a form like the Lord's form. So then Gopakumar, who is speaking to the Brahman, stepping back a bit from what's going on, but now looking at it from the context of Gopakumar explaining to Jana Sharma what he experienced, this thing which he experienced, then he says, he apologizes that I cannot explain this with words, and I may even be committing an offense by trying to, but I'm just trying to give you just a little hint. That's it. Only a little hint. Tiny little hint. It's not possible to do more. Then he explains an interesting thing about Vaikuntha, how, and it was mentioned also, Narada Muni mentioned it, I think, or someone mentioned it to Narada Muni, in the first part, that actually everyone is more or less equal there. This is a fact. In Vaikuntha, more or less, the devotees are equal. There may be some gradations, but in so many respects, the devotees are more or less equal. You don't get the great variety that you do in Goloka Vrindavan. So he explains, and then he explains how this, well, he explains basically about the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He says that they're all equal, although there appears to be a hierarchy. And this is just because they manifest their opulences and powers differently at different times. So therefore, at a certain time, one person may appear to be greater than another person, but it's just because that apparently greater person is manifesting his or her opulence or power more then. And even if there are manifestations of inequality, no one becomes envious. Rather, they're effulgent with good qualities. These are different characteristics of the people in Vaikuntha. You should probably note them down. Even though they have a life which resembles sense enjoyment, extreme opulence, a lot of singing and dancing, traveling around in aeroplanes, you know, like pleasure craft, in the association of members of the opposite sex, but actually they are totally absorbed in serving the Lord without distraction. There's a well-known verse in the third canto when the four Kumars go to Vaikuntha. Then they find out that the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they travel in planes made of lapis lazuli and emeralds with their consorts, meaning members of the opposite sex, who are very beautiful, you know, just completely, unimaginably beautiful by our standards. But they cannot be stimulated to passion, even by all the joking and all the charms of their exceptionally beautiful consorts. So these are characteristics of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Even though they're on the highest level of changelessness, being of course well beyond the influence of matter, but still they transform playfully to please the Lord in terms of his pastimes. And then Gopikumar, he says that this happens with everyone. The people, the animals, the buildings, everything. And he says, sometimes the buildings seem to be made of gold and jewels. Sometimes they seem to be made of solid moonlight. So even though they're situated in changelessness, being totally on the platform of eternal existence, but still they transform to satisfy the Lord. And one can only understand this if you get the Karuna Shakti of the Lord, the mercy energy. So if any of us are having any difficulty following all this or dropping off or anything, could be connected with that. Or, you know, I guess we should present it more interestingly also. And when one comes to this platform, Brahman happiness seems humorous. I mean, in a sort of sarcastic sense. It's useless. It's pathetic. Yes. And that happiness of Brahman, the experience of Brahman, it flees out of embarrassment. So then, Gopikumar, speaking to the Brahman now, tells the Brahman that when I saw all this, I thought that if the devotees are like this, what is the Lord going to be like? So then, the Lord's associates return and take Gopikumar in. And then what he sees, if what he saw in the suburbs could not be explained in words, what he saw inside the gates could not be described by Anantashesh with his thousands of mouths in a lifetime of Brahma. So I guess it must have been quite something. There was a succession of gates. Each had a gatekeeper. And each time Gopakumar thought it was the Lord and humbly bowed to him as usual. But then eventually the devotees who were taking him in explained to him how to recognize the Lord. He has the Sri Vatsa, white, a tuft of white hair on his chest, or somewhere Prabhupada says, on the right side of his chest. And he wears the Kostubha gem. So then Gopakumar is a little bit more on the lookout. And they explain to him what to do when you meet the Lord. You stand like this, at some distance, hands folded. You don't move. You don't display any bodily transformations. You just stand there and present yourself. Here I am, like that. First you bow to him. Then you stand on one side and you look down at his lotus feet. Then you don't move, you don't do anything, you just stand with your hands offering namaskars with folded palms like that. So then Gopakumar went through one gate which was beyond in all respects the other gates, and he saw one palace. First of all, as he started coming through the gates, he saw one building. It was very amazing. He thought, the palace of my Lord. It was the gatehouse. But then finally, when he went through this last gate, he saw a palace. He says, rapidly passing many very wonderful districts with all kinds of residences and gates, I entered the most excellent transcendental neighborhood and came to one palace at whose feet other palaces stood in attendance. It exhibited many excellences, which were all realized to their extreme limit. Radiant like millions of suns and moons, this palace captured the mind and eyes. And then he looked inside and he saw Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan looked very beautiful, with four arms decorated with bangles and armlets, with his beautiful yellow silk cloth, his beautiful earrings, his eyebrows, which were just like bows, dancing eyebrows, his Kostubha gem, his consort Rama, his beautiful teeth, just like pearls, and very amazing scene. Very amazing scene to see Lord Narayan accompanied by Lakshmi and other associates like Garuda, Shesha, and other great, great personalities. All of his weapons in their personified forms. His smile and words and glances, which were just stealing away the hearts of his devotees. So Gopakumar saw this, became overwhelmed, forgot all the good advice he'd been given, and ran forward shouting, "Gopal! Krishna!" Some of the devotees grabbed him, struggling with them, trying to get free to be with his Lord. He fell unconscious. So then the Lord, or the devotees, picked him up, and he started coming back to consciousness, clearing his tears from his eyes. And then the Lord started speaking to him, "Come back to your senses. My dear boy, come here. Come to me immediately." Gopakumar became so happy. He danced uncontrollably. The attendants couldn't hold him. Finally, he became a little more settled, and he came before the Lord. And then the Lord spoke to him. It's actually very beautiful what the Lord said, so I think I'll just read it if that's okay. It's really very nice. "Welcome, welcome, dear boy. I am very, very fortunate to meet you here because I've been eagerly waiting to see you for a long time. My dear friend, you've passed many lifetimes without giving any attention to me at all. Like a fool, for so long I've been dancing in eager expectation. Maybe in this lifetime, maybe in this lifetime, maybe in this birth or that, he will finally turn his face towards me. But I couldn't find any pretext, my dear brother, on which I could bring you to my abode while still upholding the ancient rules of religion which I have imposed upon myself. Considering your mercilessness towards me, considering your mercilessness towards me, I became impatient, full of anxiety to receive your favor. Transgressing my eternal code of behavior, I arranged for you to take your current birth in that divine district of Govardhan, my most beloved place, dear boy. I myself became your guru, Jayanta. Today, you have finally fulfilled the desire I harbored for so long. Please nourish your happiness and mine by remaining here permanently." So the Lord, speaking such an amazing way, very humbly, that "I wanted you to come back, but I feel bound by the rules of Dharma." So Sanatana Goswami explains that Gopakumar in his previous lives had not chanted the holy names. If he had, then the Lord might have intervened, as he did with Ajamil, because he sent the Vishnudutas to Ajamil. But anyway, even though Gopakumar didn't chant, still he just did it. Anyway, he let him be born at Govardhan, and then he himself appeared, manifested as this amazing spiritual master that Gopakumar has. So then, some of Gopakumar's experiences in Vaikuntha. In order to please Gopakumar, Lord Narayan called in some cowherd boys, Vaikuntha cowherd, cowherd boys playing on flutes, and Gopakumar associated with them, and he thought it was quite nice. But then later the goddess of fortune took him outside, and he saw the opulence of Vaikuntha. So he saw that all the opulences were fully spiritual, and that they all submitted themselves to the control of the devotees, appearing as the devotees wanted. So even when there's no opulence there, there is opulence. And even when there is opulence, the devotees are unattached as inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Some of the special opulences and powers approached Gopakumar and said, "We are here, you can have us." Gopakumar refused. He said, "No, thank you. I will remain a cowherd boy." So he did that. But now he felt more convinced than he had felt before, that now I have made it. I must have made it. This must be that place I'm looking for. Because he was experiencing that the place, the happiness in the place, the mercy he was getting in the place, and this form of the Lord in this place, they were better than any he'd experienced before. Meaning directly experienced, but not quite the same as Madan Gopal. So he, somehow or other, Gopakumar got the service of fanning the Lord. He got the service of fanning the Lord. So he would fan the Lord while calling out, "Gopal, Krishna," and singing songs of Vrindavan. But after every session, his well-meaning friends would call him aside, and in the words, in the mood of an instructor, tell him, "Don't sing those songs. They're not appropriate here." They said, "This Gopal form is just a pastime form of the Lord. And in fact, it is presented by the illusory potency. And so his pastimes are illusory. And we are attached to the reality. So don't be so, attracted or attached to these Gopal pastimes. They're just for beginners." Then another group of devotees came and said that that's not true. All the Lord's pastimes are real. Then another group of devotees came and said that all the Lord's pastimes are equal, actually. So his Gopal pastimes are very nice. And Gopakumar felt a little more satisfied. But what was Gopakumar doing? He was chanting his mantra all the time. So as he would chant his mantra, he started feeling separation. Well, he would go into a state of meditation and see Madan Gopal and cowherd people and cows, and then come out and be in Vaikuntha and feel this is not the same. He started feeling separation so much that he started to see Lord Narayan as Gopal and his wives as Radharani and Chandravali. But then suddenly he'd come out of it and realize, no, it's not true. And it's not the same. It's not as good. So, therefore, he ends up in his sort of, you know, the state at least that he has at least in principle ended up in on other occasions, sometimes satisfied, sometimes not satisfied. And then one day, he met Narada Muni. We'll explain about that tomorrow. Any comments or questions? But Brihad Bhagavatamrita says that when he came back from Mahakalapur, he was in Vrindavan, he went to Mathura, and he got educated in Srimad Bhagavatam, and he learnt things. You know, it appears he didn't learn everything. He learnt about the process. He learnt a lot of things. It's true that in Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, these things are mentioned about Krishna's superiority to Lord Narayan. But the thing is that, you know, only those really who have been, not everyone who studies Srimad Bhagavatam understands it in that way. So it would appear from this that he doesn't quite understand it completely in that way yet. You know, like the followers of Madhvacharya, they don't accept in the same way that we do. Charu Chandra Prabhu is saying that it's reassuring to see how Gopakumar didn't get converted, you know, into one of these other processes. You know, he got sort of influenced. He became influenced, but he didn't become converted to another process. Yes, because he, you know, he's so fixed. He has this faith in his spiritual master, and he has this faith or this experience through the chanting which has convinced him that I must keep chanting. So despite, you know, all the very interesting and important things he sees and hears and how influential the various people he meets are, still he doesn't become completely won over. He keeps on with his chanting. Even Lord Narayan couldn't convince him. That's true. Because this is his eternal nature, actually. There's something very powerful, his eternal nature. And he tries. He preaches to himself. You know, I mean, we're not mentioning everything here. We couldn't mention everything. We'd need a lot of time. But he preaches to himself that this is the same. Come on, mind. Accept it. But his mind won't accept it. Ryan says he was his spiritual master. Anyway, Lord Narayan knows a little bit more about these things than he has said so far. Yeah. There's a little bit more. The Madan Gopal Mantra. We don't know. Doesn't say. Because you're not allowed to write it even, what to speak of, speak it, unless you're given the special initiation. And then, you know, you're not allowed to tell anyone. So I don't think you were here at that time, but in one of the earlier classes, or no, maybe you were there. You know, you must have been there. It was pointed out that when people are writing something to describe this mantra or writing about the mantra, they never state the mantra fully. Either they just put part of it or they put it sort of around the wrong ways or something like that so you won't be able to figure it out, or just some indirect reference to it, because they're specifically not presenting it. Unless it's to someone who is, you know, an initiate, someone who is in the group, who is allowed to chant it. Yeah. Sanatan Goswami does not say what his source is exactly. But we can understand that there's some sort of revelation to him of this actual, the original conversation, original, but I mean, the conversation between Janmajaya and Jaimini. It is not presented as being a fictional story. Yeah. It's not presented as being a fictional story. So, you know, taking things as they are means we would basically then accept it as it is. An associate of Lord Chaitanya, so. And he's an eternal associate of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, resident of Goloka Vrindavan. It's no problem for him to have some revelation, realization like that. No problem at all. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.